meditations of our hearts be always pleasing to you, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So about, I think it was as many as 20 years ago, I read a story, and it was one of those stories that you get in email from people. Now, 20 years ago, there was no Facebook or anything like that, so it wasn't quite as widely spread as the same story is today, and I have seen it even in the last week. I've seen it come through my Facebook feed. I want to use this story today because it illustrates a point that I'm going to make. And at the same time, I want to be really clear that I did look the story up on Snopes.com. Snopes.com is where you go to find out if something someone sends you on Facebook is real or not. And it's kind of real, the story. Never really happened. Some things like that have been reported at different times, but this story, as it appears, especially the version that's on Facebook right now, never really happened. And so that doesn't tell us that the story isn't worthwhile. It just tells us how to listen to the story. So this is a story with a message or a point that I'm going to draw from it. And that's its value to us today. So let me begin. The story is about a man. He's a pastor, and his name is Jeremiah Stipek. That detail is in all the versions of the stories that I've ever seen. Jeremiah was called to be the pastor of a megachurch, a 10,000-member church. And on the first day that he was to be introduced to his church, he arrived having transformed himself, having disguised himself as a homeless person. And he sort of hung out in front of the church as people were gathering, and he spoke to them, and he said hello to some of them. And as he wandered through the crowds of gathering people, not very many people acknowledged him. Very few of them said hello to him. And so he went inside a little ways in, and he began to ask people for money for food. And nobody gave him any money. In fact, at this point, when he started asking for money, people wouldn't even meet his eyes. And then he went into the sanctuary, and he went and he sat down in the front row. And the ushers came and they said, "Oh, no, sir, the place for you is back here." And they moved him to the back of the church, and they sat him in one of the back rows of the church. And the service began, and they started out singing some wonderful music together, and they sang two or three songs and said a few prayers. And then the chief elder stood and walked to the podium and said, "The moment has arrived, my friends, for us to meet our new pastor." And of course, the homeless man at the back stands and begins shambling up the center aisle. And people are looking around for their new pastor, and they see this homeless man, and they're distraught. He's going to mess everything up. He's going to make a scene right now, and we're supposed to meet our new pastor. Well, of course, the elders were in on this whole prank, and he steps up onto the stage, and he introduces himself to the congregation. You can imagine where the story goes from here. And I'm going to stop there. There's more to the internet version of the story. Go ahead and look it up if you like. It's not that hard to find. But what I want to do with this is talk about how he was seen. How was he seen when he was out front of the church in the guise of a homeless person, and when he was asking for money, and when he was sitting down in the front rows of this beautiful sanctuary? Who is he? Who is this man? Is he a homeless person? Is he a pastor worthy of being called to this 10,000 member congregation? Who do people say that he is at different times in this story? For that matter, who do people say that I am? Here I am standing here wearing fancy robes. I've got a chasuble on, this fancy poncho that goes over my head. It's covered in gilding and gold and symbols and all of this. And underneath it, there's more. I've got a stole on and I'm wearing robes. You can't look at me and think anything but, okay, that's a priest. Or at least a minister. This is a person who is leading worship of one kind or another. All the signs are here for you to know who I am. Who do people say that I am? But what if I ask Jesus' second question, the second question that he asked in the story today? Who do you say that I am? And that changes things. Because when I ask that personal question of an individual in this congregation, most of you have a relationship with me of one kind or another. And you can answer from that relationship. Jesus asks, "Who do people say that I am?" He asks this of his disciples as they're walking into the region of the villages of Caesarea Philippi, a Gentile region. And his disciples say, well, there's lots of things that people think you might be. Some of them think that you might be John the Baptist, raised from the dead. Because remember, John's dead at this point. And others think that you might be Elijah. Still others think that you are one of the prophets of old. And so Jesus goes on and asks that second question, that more personal question, who do you say that I am? And Peter answers from his heart. He says, you are the Messiah. Now, you would think that this was a good thing, that Peter got it right. Here we go. Here is the correct answer from Peter's heart. And yet this is the very moment in the story when everything falls apart. Jesus goes on and starts talking about his suffering. He doesn't say, oh, Peter, well done, you good and faithful servant. You have figured it out. I'm so pleased that you finally get it, that somebody finally understands who I am. That is not what he does at all. Instead, he turns to the other disciples and he says, the Son of Man, and that's one of the titles that he uses for himself, the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes. And be killed, and on the third day rise again. This is very important. Jesus is not changing the subject. He is responding to what Peter said. And so, when Peter says, "No way, Lord. This shall not be. You can't be rejected and killed. You're the Messiah." When Peter responds in this way, Jesus rebukes him sternly, calls him Satan. Get behind me, Satan. And he turns to the rest of the disciples and all of those who were with them, and he says, those who would become my followers must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Jesus doesn't really care what people say that he is, or who people say that he is. And I don't think he even cares who Peter thinks that he is. That's not the point of this interchange. What's going on here is that Jesus is teaching the disciples and Peter and us how to recognize the Messiah. Jesus is teaching them and us how to recognize that which is holy in another. He's teaching us how to recognize that which is holy in another person and even in a homeless person. When we look at a homeless person, who do we see? Can we even see past our fear and our judgments? Can we see the person there at all? For that matter, when we look at someone that we respect and admire, can we see that person either? Or do we just see a different set of judgments? Positive instead of negative. Jesus tells his disciples and us that we must deny ourselves and take up our cross and follow him. But how are we to deny ourselves? And how might denying ourselves and taking up our cross allow us to see the Christ in someone else? Whether they be a homeless person or the very return of Christ. The very question, who do people say that I am? It sends us into a mode of thinking that is judgmental. It sends us into judging others. It sends us into evaluating who they are based on how they look or how they speak or their race or whatever. To deny yourself is to stop judging and instead give. Give blessing. Use the gifts that you have been given to bless others. Give the grace that God has so freely given to you to others. That's the message. That's the lesson that Jesus wants the disciples to hear in that moment. And that's the lesson that Jesus wanted Peter to hear. And Peter really got it. He really understood it. And I'm not saying that based on what happens next in the gospel. I'm actually saying that based on his own words. In the first letter of Peter, in the fourth chapter, we find these verses. Above all, maintain constant love for one another, for love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaining. Like good stewards of the manifold grace of God, serve one another with whatever gift each of you has received. Whoever speaks must do so as one speaking the very words of God. Whoever serves must do so with the strength that God provides, so that God may be glorified in all things through Jesus Christ. To him belong the glory and the power forever and ever. We seek to see and recognize the Christ in others, and to do this, we have to deny ourselves. If we see a homeless person and judge them for their poor choices that got them into that predicament, or for their addictions, or for their mental illness, how can we possibly see what is holy in them? For that matter, if we see someone who is rich or successful or beautiful, and we admire and respect them, how can we see what is holy in them? Jesus and James and Peter are all calling us to see differently. To see the holy in someone is to look with different eyes, but it's not a technique that you can learn. Seeing differently, seeing the Christ in someone else, isn't this spiritual discipline or this spiritual trick this you need to learn in order to see the holy in someone else. Rather, to see the holy in someone else is to act with selfless giving. We see the holy in others when we offer that which is holy in ourselves. So the only right way to answer Jesus' question, "Who do you say that I am?" is to respond, "I offer you that which is holy in me, and I see that which is holy in you."